making TV special.
Alice. Made with creamy butter.
And you know what that means?
It's happening. I can feel it.
Yep.
From their 1994 album Stoned and Dethroned, that's the Jesus and Mary Chain with the appropriately titled Dirty Water. We're going to be swimming in some dirty water, my friends. Welcome to Media Monarchy. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show MediaMonarchy.com. If you're keeping score, this is the B-side of episode 119, and I'm coming to you early in the morning, April 24th, 2009. Coming to you live from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org. Coming in early to give you the B-side, the things we couldn't get to last week, and trying to get ahead of episode 120 coming right up. But first, we've got a whole harvest of headlines from foodworldorder.com, the nascent new sister site to MediaMonarchy.com. So I mentioned last week that I spoke again with my man in Japan, James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. I talked to him for episode 83 of his show, titled Food World Order. farm to fork fascism, electronic identification for animals, and failing GM corn in Africa is just the tip of the pyramid when it comes to the unfolding international big agri big food system. So in this episode, they probe the national animal identification system, Monsanto, the Rockefeller Gates Green Revolution, and ultimately name the Food World Order. So you can download that whole episode 83, and I implore you to do so. You can also check out my whole interview, rambling as it may be, is available as well. So again, thanks to James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. Hopefully, we're going to turn the tables on him soon and have him as a guest on Media Monarchy. So if we look at some of the things we haven't quite had time to get to on FoodWorldOrder.com, going back to Tax Day, April 15th, from Der Spiegel, Germany bans the cultivation of GM corn. Germany has banned the cultivation of GM corn, claiming that MON810 is dangerous for the environment. But that argument might not stand up in court, and Berlin could face fines totaling millions of euros if American multinational Monsanto decides to challenge the prohibition on its seed. The sowing season may be just around the corner, but this year, German farmers will not be planting genetically modified crops. German Agriculture Minister Ilse Aigner, A-I-G-N-E-R, announced a couple of Tuesdays ago that she was banning the cultivation of genetically modified corn in Germany. Under the new regulations, the cultivation of MON810, a GM corn produced by the American biotech giant Monsanto, will be prohibited in Germany, as will the sale of its seed. Aigner told reporters Tuesday she had legitimate reasons to believe that MON810 posed, quote, a danger to the environment, a position which she said the Environment Ministry also supported. In taking the step, Aigner is taking advantage of a clause in the EU law which allows individual companies, I'm sorry, countries, it's a Freudian slip there, taking advantage of a clause in EU law that allows individual countries to impose such bans. Contrary to assertions stating otherwise, my decision is not politically motivated, she said, referring to reports that she had come under pressure to impose a ban from within her party, the conservative Bavaria-based Christian Social Union. She stressed that the ban should be understood as an individual case and not as a statement of principle regarding the future policy relating to genetic engineering. The next post, tobacco, fluoride, pharma, psychiatry, and poor, stupid kids. First, by way of Times Online, we have a top UK dentist saying water fluoridation is the answer. His name is Dr. Nigel Carter, and he writes, simple measures can prevent the need for a child's teeth to be extracted in hospital. As many know, brushing teeth twice a day with fluoride toothpaste, visiting a dentist regularly, and avoiding frequent sugary snacks and drinks will best help to maintain a healthy smile. Okay, yeah. But if you jump down a little bit, he says, quote, we encourage the fluoridation of water supplies and welcome the planned consultations on the move in the Northwest and Yorkshire, where decay figures have been higher in the past. Fluoride in your water makes you docile. Our good friends, the Nazis, knew that. Where they learned it, we won't get into that right now. However, a headline from Alternet, Big Food is copying Big Tobacco's disinfo tactics. And another one from EcoChildsPlay.com, MTA, ADHD, Ritalin, and Pediatric Psychiatry, How Science Screwed My Kids. Also by way of TheDailyBeast.com. More and more parents waking up to the Big Pharma vaccine nightmare. But from the Washington Post, with a lot of research links to Cornell University, research links poor children's stress and brain impairment. Children raised in poverty suffer many ill effects. They often have health problems and tend to struggle in school, which can create a cycle of poverty across generations. Now, research is providing what could be crucial clues to explain how childhood poverty translates into dimmer chances of success. Chronic stress from growing up poor appears to have a direct impact on the brain, leaving children with impairment in at least one key area, working memory. There's been lots of evidence that low-income families are under tremendous amounts of stress, and we know that stress has many implications, said Gary W. Evans, a professor of human ecology at Cornell in Ithaca, New York, who led the research. What this data raises is the possibility that it's also relative, or rather related, to cognitive development. With the economic crisis threatening to plunge more children into poverty, other researchers said the work offers insight into how poverty affects long-term achievement and underscores the potential ramifications of chronic stress early in life. TheTechHerald.com, as well as PNAS.org, you can read the abstract from some of this research from Cornell University. Always kind of subscribe to the idea that hardship can make you stronger. But we still have much, much more on foodworldorder.com. From the 416 Happy Hour menu posted up on April 16th, a long list of ugly headlines. The local food movement, eatdrinkbetter.com, asking the question, are we there yet? We've also got new bird flu cases suggest pandemic danger is rising, from the Independent. Truckers unwittingly used to transport dangerous avian flu materials. This comes by way of healthfreedomusa.org. And there's a bit of speculation that nasty stuff is going around in trucks. And we'll see later how a lot of trucks in and around the borders of this North American community are going unchecked. A little bit later, we're going to be talking about drugs. But right here, there's also a YouTube video question. And again, getting into the realm of those crazy conspiracy theories. Avian flu pandemic, the next false flag. Therapy to suppress peanut allergies is reported by way of the Los Angeles Times as well as TalkingScience.org. And again, we're going to see more things about suppressing memories. Government and Big Pharma push a bill to drug America's mothers. That's H.R. 20, the Mothers Act. We'll hear a little bit more about that in a moment. Cannabis houses have lower carbon footprint, from ecoworldly.com. And then a brutal shift. Thalidomide was developed as Nazi chemical weapon, naturalnews.com. CDC covered up high lead levels in D.C. water, dirty water. That's from Raw Story. Got mercury. The politics of contaminated fish, diseases hurting the chocolate crop. That's from the Telegraph. 1,500 farmers have committed suicide in India over a span of, I believe, many, many months and perhaps years. I know one of the comments on this story from the Independent said, why you gotta twist it and make it sound like 1,500 people committed mass suicide, which is what I thought when I saw the headline. So to clarify there. Autism rates significantly higher near toxic waste sites, again from Eco Child's Play. Singing Sanger's Praises and Whistling Past the Graveyard, from the neocontownhall.com site, but at least they are calling out Margaret Sanger, founder of Planned Parenthood, Hitler-loving eugenicist. Or maybe more appropriately, more correctly, Hitler was a Sanger-loving eugenicist. And lastly, on this happy hour post from the BBC, Attenborough warns on population. We've got one more posting of massive headlines on foodworldorder.com. And as I've said, I think, on the show in relation to the new site, as probably with James Corbett in the interview, you can start out a site and say it's going to be about one thing, but you then realize very quickly that the food world order is the vaccines and the water and the eugenics and the food. All of it. The health, the enviro health. Pharma Water, Super Weed, and HR20, Mental Screening for Mom. And topping this one, tons of released drugs taint U.S. water. Now, I do at least have to give it to the Associated Press. They have been on this for quite some time now, and they've always done water testing, but it's getting a lot more attention now. U.S. manufacturers, including major drug makers, have legally released at least 271 million pounds of pharmaceuticals into waterways that often provide drinking water. Contamination the federal government has consistently overlooked. This all according to an Associated Press investigation. Hundreds of active pharmaceutical ingredients are used in a variety of manufacturing, including drug making. For example, lithium is used to make ceramics and treat bipolar disorder. Nitroglycerin is a heart drug and is also used in explosives. Copper shows up in everything from pipes to contraceptives. Federal and industry officials say they don't know the extent to which pharmaceuticals are released by U.S. manufacturers because no one tracks them as drugs. But a close analysis of 20 years of federal records found that, in fact, the government unintentionally keeps data on a few, allowing a glimpse of the pharmaceuticals coming from factories. As part of its ongoing Pharma Water investigation about trace concentrations of pharmaceuticals in drinking water, AP identified 22 compounds that show up on two lists. The EPA monitors them as industrial chemicals that are released into rivers, lakes, and other bodies of water under federal pollution laws, while the Food and Drug Administration classifies them as active pharmaceutical ingredients. Marinate on that. Drug makers, water pollution, and another don't ask, don't tell policy. Same topic, but that's from Raw Story. HFCS, high fructose corn syrup beverages linked to, now it's heart risk. That's from the New York Times. Sprouting seeds for health. From eatdrinkbetter.com, there's a video from Time Magazine, and of course everybody's getting into the green scene. Lots of bullshit greenwashing going on. But I try and post up a wide swath of material for you. By no stretch do I endorse everything. I give it to you as a wide smorgasbord so you can do the data mining yourself. Or along with me. So Time Magazine, under their new frugality video series, they've got one called The Organic Gardener. Superweed explosion threatens Monsanto heartlands. This is from France24.com. And no, it's not about marijuana. Unfortunately. We'll get to the weed in just a few minutes, though. The gospel of high-tech genetically modified crops is not sounding quite so sweet in the land of the converted. A new pest, the evil pigweed, is hitting headlines and chomping its way across Sunbelt states, threatening to transform cotton and soybean plots into weed battlefields. In late 2004, superweeds that resisted Monsanto's iconic Roundup herbicide popped up in GM crops in the county of Macon, Georgia. Monsanto, the U.S. multinational biotech corporation, is the world's leading producer of Roundup, as well as genetically engineered seeds. Company figures show that 9 out of 10 U.S. farmers produce Roundup-ready seeds for their soybean crops. Superweeds have since alarmingly appeared in other parts of Georgia, as well as South Carolina, North Carolina, Arkansas, Tennessee, Kentucky, Missouri, all according to media reports. Roundup contains the active ingredient glyphosate, or glyphosate, G-L-Y-P-H-O-S-A-T-E, glyphosate, which is the most used herbicide in the USA. I don't need to go any further into that to just plant the idea into your head that when we're talking about the fear of anthropogenic, man-made global warming, we're not talking about the massive genetic mutations that are going to be coming down the road very soon. So a little more on H.R. 20, the Mothers Act. The new mother's mandated mental health test has already passed the House. That's from DailyPaul.com, as well from RogueGovernment.com. H.R. 20, or the Mothers Act, opens up state control over family planning. This is written by Lee Rogers of RogueGovernment.com. The terrorists in the federal government have passed yet another insane piece of legislation that proves that their only purpose is to vote in favor of laws that destroy freedom and enslave humanity. The U.S. House of Representatives voted in favor of House Resolution 20, or the Melanie Blocker Stokes Mom's Opportunity to Access Health, Education, Research, and Support for Postpartum Depression Act, Mothers Act. This bill, with a link for you to govtrack.us, you can read it yourself. This bill would give the government the authority through the Health and Human Services Department to deliver education and so-called services for individuals with or at risk for postpartum conditions. It would also allow the Gov to provide funds for support services for families who have family members with postpartum conditions. This all sounds innocent. The problem with this bill is that the language is so incredibly broad that the Gov could potentially set up programs that would prevent mothers from taking their newborn children home with them unless they pass screening tests. Under the guise of helping people, this bill opens up a can of worms that could potentially open up a new level of government control over who gets to be parents and who doesn't. And the yuppie, wannabe, greeny weenies will love it. They're allowed to crank them out, but poor, stupid people aren't. That's eugenics. That's tomorrow's children. It's Brave New World. It's Gattaca. Call it what you want. Another one, the last one on that from naturalnews.com. Mother's Act, mandatory screening of moms for depression is like a bad movie rerun. We've also got injuries and death caused by medications skyrocketing 38% from naturalnews.com. I'm not sure over what time span that is, but there is also a review from Variety of the new documentary called Food Incorporated. From the New York Times, the West is told to expect water shortfalls. Not short waterfalls, water shortfalls for us in the West. But probably the South. Somebody put up a nice video about population reduction in relation to the 2012 meme, and we're going to mention the Georgia Guidestones in just a few minutes. FEMA approves individual assistance program. That's from KXMB. That's going on up in North Dakota. And we've got a lot more on FEMA coming up later. IDF soldiers forced to take part in medical experiment. That's from the Jerusalem Post. And those are Israeli defense soldiers taking part in medical experiments. Google ringworm children. More spices recalled in Salmonella scare. That's from KCRA.com. Global warming culprits. Oh, here we go. We got a whole swath of this. Cars and cows. That's from ABC News. Worried about climate change? Here we go. It's not just the cows. The animal cows. It's the human cows. ABC and Huffington Post. Worried about climate change? Fix obesity. A slim chance to combat global warming from USA Today. Global warming. It's fat people's fault. From Lab Notes on Newsweek. Obesity as cause of global warming? ? From the Los Angeles Times. Fat people blamed for global warming from the Telegraph. Rearing cattle produces more greenhouse gases than driving cars, so says the United Nations. livestock a major threat to environment. That's more from that UN report. Linking right to the report for you again. Cow emissions more damaging to the planet than CO2 from cars from the Independent. I think I've already said that. I'm swimming in it here. And now we have 17-year-olds gaining access to the Plan B pill. That's from the Washington Post, U.S. News and World Report. And we've also got from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, their headline is More Kids Get Shots After School Crackdown. Meaning kids who didn't get vaccinated, which is not the law. It's the policy. But when you don't do it, they kick you out, and then you're truant, and then you get busted. So, more kids get shots after school crackdown, meaning they were kicked out for not complying to a law that doesn't exist. Eternal dumbshine of the drugless mind, treating addiction by eliminating drug-associated memories. This from ScienceDaily.com, and again, more on erasing these unpleasant memories. Agent Orange exposure tied to prostate cancer return from U.S. News and World Report. TheBigMoney.com. Green eggs and plastic. Why organic food uses so much enviro-unfriendly plastic. And finally, interestingly, oh, and I did just mention eternal sunshine. Jim Carrey has written an article that's up on Alternet, and it's called We Still Don't Know If Vaccines Are Safe. The public outcry, and again, he, Jenny McCarthy, and all the parents looking at vaccines, it's really forcing it into the mainstream. And what's been amazing on the one hand is how the alternative media have been able to force uncomfortable issues into the public spotlight. The other thing that we are seeing is, of course, then the controllers, the controlled oppositions, the phony left-right Republicrats, they get out in front of real grassroots issues, take hold of them, and misdirect and redirect and run into the ground real movements and ideas and questions and grievances. The most recent egregious example was the Tea Parties. So that's the massive harvest of headlines from foodworldorder.com. I think we're going to get some extra contributors, hopefully going soon. That's going to be new to me. I've never handed over permissions to a blogger blog, so we'll see how it'll go. We're working on it behind the scenes. And again, thanks to all you guys who send headlines and news clips to me. Keep it up. We're going to shift gears, though, but we did mention previously the Georgia Guidestones. The new issue of Wired Magazine, which if you haven't seen it or flipped through it, it's actually really kind of cool. It's, I believe, guest edited by J.J. Abrams, the guy who did Lost and a bunch of other stuff and is doing the new Star Trek remake and blah, blah, blah. But the whole issue is done in a sort of like pulp mystery style magazine where there's little puzzles and games, and you know, it has the feel that you would turn to the back and order X-ray specs and things. Fittingly, nestled in that new issue, it's out right now, all newsstands now, American Stonehenge. The strangest monument in America looms over a barren knoll in northeastern Georgia. Five massive slabs of polished granite rise out of the earth in a star pattern. The rocks are each 16 feet tall, with four of them weighing more than 20 tons apiece. Together, they support a 25,000-pound capstone. Approaching the edifice, it's hard not to immediately think of England's Stonehenge, or possibly even the ominous monolith from 2001. Built in 1980, these pale gray rocks are quietly awaiting the end of the world as we know it. Called the Georgia Guidestones, the monument is a mystery. Nobody knows exactly who commissioned it or why. The only clues to its origin are on a nearby plaque on the ground, which gives the dimensions and explains a series of intricate notches and holes that correspond to the movements of the sun and stars. and the gods themselves, directives carved into the rocks. These instructions appear in 8 languages, ranging from English to Swahili, and reflect a peculiar New Age ideology. Some of the directives are vaguely eugenic. Guide reproduction wisely, improving fitness and diversity. Others prescribe standard-issue hippie mysticism. Prize truth, beauty, love, seeking harmony with the infinite. What's most widely agreed upon, based upon the evidence available, is that the Guidestones are meant to instruct the dazed survivors of some impending apocalypse as they attempt to reconstitute civilization. Not everyone's comfortable with this notion. A few days before I visited, the stones had been splattered with polyurethane and spray-painted with graffiti, including slogans like, "Death to the New World Order." This defacement was the first serious act of vandalism in the Guidestones' history, but it was hardly the first objection to their existence. In fact, for more than 30 years, this uncanny structure in the heart of the Bible Belt has been generating responses that range from enchantment to horror. Supporters, notable among them Yoko Ono, have praised the messages as a stirring call to rational thinking, akin to Thomas Paine's The New Age, or The Age of Reason. Opponents have attacked them as the Ten Commandments of the Antichrist. There's a 70 meg PDF for you, the Georgia Guidestones Guidebook, published by Elberton Granite in 1981, all tying in to this story from Wired Magazine, American Stonehenge, the Georgia Guidestones. Now it's time for Lifestyles of the Rich and Nazi. Chanel, Hearst, and art auctions. First, from the Times Online, Chanel and the Nazis, what the movies won't tell you. Why is Coco Chanel getting a free pass on her collaboration with the Nazis? Her past was deeply compromised. As we gear up for cultural Chanel mania this summer with 2 hagiographic films about the designer, a new biography, and the sound of slavering from glossy magazines, it is worth pausing to investigate Coco Chanel's wholesale and retail involvement with the Nazis. The world's greatest fashionista may have rescued women from the corset, but she did not have a good war. When shoppers swoon over the iconic quilted handbag with the CC logo, most are unaware that Chanel once went to Berlin to plot with Walter Schellenberg, who wore his Waffen SS logo as Hitler's chief of foreign intelligence. Perhaps Chanel lovers also have no idea that she tried to wrest control of her perfume manufacturing from a Jewish family, taking advantage of some pro-Aryan laws. Or that she was arrested for war crimes and then mysteriously released. Previously, I'd seen it mentioned that Chanel had survived the war rather comfortably at the Paris Ritz in the arms of a Nazi officer, Hans Gunther von Dinklage, and then gone into exile into Switzerland with him, but a few hours spent in the library revealed that she was far more deeply involved with the Germans than that. There was even a somewhat ridiculous Nazi plot using Chanel as bait called Operation Model Hut. None of this will be discussed, of course, in 2 upcoming biographical films, Coco Avant Chanel, starring Audrey Tautou of Amelie fame, and the other one, Coco Chanel and Igor Stravinsky with Anna Margolis. That one's about Chanel's relationship with the Russian composer. Nor was any of this detailed in the Chanel TV miniseries with Shirley MacLaine last year, or in the 1981 film Chanel Solitaire, or Solitaire, Chanel Solitaire from 1981. With, you know, good commercial sense, all films avoid the German invasion of Paris and Chanel's collaboration. It's a case of don't mention the war. Don't mention the war is in quotes in this article Chanel and the Nazis, what the films won't tell you, from the Times Online. And there's quotes around don't mention the war. And so I wondered what that was a reference to. And of course, one quick Google let me know that it is, of course, John Cleese and the Germans.
Are these Germans too?
Oh, yes, sir.
Right, right. Here's the plan. I'll stand there and ask them if they want something to drink before the war. Before the lunch. Don't mention the war.
Yeah, yeah.
Can we help you?
Are you speaking English?
Of course.
Ah, wonderful, wonderful. Ah, please allow me to introduce myself. I am the owner of Forty Towers. And may I welcome your war? Your war?
You war?
You war? You war? And hope that your stay will be a happy one. Now, would you like to eat first, or would you like a drink before the war? Meaning that our trespasses will be tied up with piano wire. Sorry, sorry. Top of the old leg. Go, touch a shrapnel on the wall. Korean, Korean, more sorry than Korean.
Thank you, we will eat now.
Oh, good.
Don't mention the war. That's, of course, from Fawlty Towers. Hitler's painting of Black Cat to be auctioned. This from the Telegraph. With a photo, and I actually link you to Mullock's, the Shropshire auctioneers that are selling a bunch of Nazi booty. The Black Cat piece depicts a black cat sitting up on its haunches looking upwards and bears the fascist leader's initials, A.H. I think the fascist leader's initials are B.M., but let's not get into that right now. It is one of an array of 13 watercolors which were recently found forgotten in a collector's garage. There are early examples of Hitler's work and were painted during his 20s when he was a struggling artist. The pieces are expected to attract a great interest and could fetch thousands of pounds at auction yesterday, April 23rd. We'll have to see some of the updates and perhaps be curious as to what kind of people will snap these things up. Things like Nazi Housewife magazines. This from the BBC. A collection of the official women's magazine of the Nazis could fetch up to £700 when it goes up for sale at auction. The magazine called NS Frauenworte, aimed at German housewife during World War II, gives recipes, knitting patterns, and other household tips. Several of the magazines will feature in a lot being put up for sale by the Shropshire auctioneers Mullocks, M-U-L-L-O-C-K. Experts said the collection could fetch between £500 and £700. Richard Westwood Brooks from Mullocks said it was, quote, everything you'd expect a woman's magazine to have and more. You see nice articles about what women are doing in their groups and things like that. Then you turn the page and then you find a banner waving Nazi soldier with a big headline saying, would you have your daughter marry a Jew? Frauenworte was a fortnightly production publication and ran from 1935 to 1945. It was a nice, subtle stream of propaganda information to women. Mullocks also has a collection of boys' magazines from the 30s, which are fairly unsubtle and include lots of battle scenes. He expects those to make about £200. The way in which the propaganda machine worked, it went to everybody right the way down to almost babes in arms. Lifestyles of the Rich and Nazi. Chanel, Hearst, and art auctions. Did I miss the Hearst part? Yes. That's, of course, paintings that were stolen by the Nazis that were later bought by William Randolph Hearst have now been returned to some sort of rightful owner. We haven't had a new episode from my man, Alex Ansari, at Outside the Box. He, of course, does a daily, 5 days a week radio show on OracleBroadcasting.com, and he, of course, hosts Outside the Box every Thursday night here on Portland Community Media. And then when it's available on Google Video, I post it up for you. Latest episode I got for you from April 16th, Outside the Box, episode 198, with the notorious Max Kaiser.
You've likened this economic crisis to a controlled demolition, similar to World Trade Center Building Number 7. Can you elaborate on that statement, why you feel that way, what you think the best evidence is out there that people need to know about when it comes to the whole thing about this being manufactured, not just some accident that just kind of dropped out of the sky?
Yeah, well, I mean, first of all, I don't think people doubt that this is a controlled demolition, but I just think people are very reluctant to want to act on it or want to believe it, because people have a natural tendency to believe in the good. And this, of course, is exploited by people in the industry who are shamelessly, you know, rigging the system and destroying the system.
Now, that was Alex trying to get Max Kaiser of MaxKaiser.com, K-E-I-S-E-R. He recently, I forget what television news station he was on live, and basically referred to our current economic crash as being very similar to the controlled demolition of Building 7 on 9/11, and accuses Paulson and the rest of them of financial terrorism. That's what it is. We've got a big, ugly news purge posted up last night. It's the 423 news purge. However, we've got some good clips for you as we go through the drug war, the economy crash, 9/11 updates, Obamasiah, and the Apostles of War. But at the top, Police State International. Combat Support Battalion deployed to maintain public order at the Boston Marathon. The photo is there for you. It comes from the military themselves. They're, of course, very proud of it. They like putting the military on the streets as regular law enforcement to get you used to the idea of seeing the military on the streets as regular law enforcement. So that links back right to the Army Times. That's where the photo comes from. National Guard at the Boston Marathon. Animal rights activists on FBI's most wanted terrorist list. That's from CNN. We've got videos and lots of articles and lots of screaming and yelling in relation to the cop who arrested an ABC news reporter for filming a traffic accident, and it kind of sounded a little like this.
Can you let them go?
Hands off the truck!
I didn't do anything!
Get your hands off the truck!
Look, I'm not doing anything. I'm not doing anything.
Yeah. H.R. 1913. Local Law Enforcement Hate Crimes Prevention Act of 2009. All this great, great legislation coming from our good progressive Democrats. The mask changes. The ridiculous, tyrannical, fascist... I'm at a loss, basically. Hate crimes. It's all nice and appropriately vague. U.S. security boss clarifies comments about the border. That's from CTV. Illegal immigrants detained and then freed to work. That's from CNN. Rachel Maddow compares the sovereignty movement to the Confederacy. Veterans were a focus of the FBI extremist probe. That's from the Wall Street Journal. And again, we have all these MIAC reports and homegrown terrorism reports. And again, as I've been saying and have said for over a year now, that when the phony Democrats get in, they'll shift it back around and it'll be all about homegrown McVeigh crazies. Operation Vigilant Eagle ties into all this. Another attack on the sovereignty movement. We had a police state pillow fight. Feathery fracas lands a Vermont man in court. That's from WPTZ.com. Terror drill test airport readiness in Youngstown, Ohio. That's from Vindy.com, The Vindicator. Chicago students sent the CIA packing. That was at a college. They wanted to recruit. The student said, fuck off, cocaine importation agency. That's from socialistworker.org. Spying on Americans, business as usual under Obama. That's from Global Research. Gerald Celente again pointing out that we are descending into a fascist state. And again, more good work from RussiaToday.com. Alan Keyes, if you recall, recently correctly said that Obama's going to tear the country apart. Or under Obama, the country's going to fall apart. How about that? However, now he is going even further. And without fully getting into breaking down, like we were saying before, how the talking heads get in front of real issues and co-opt, Alan Keyes is now saying the government will stage terror and declare martial law. That sounds like stuff those crazy lefties said under the Bush administration. But now if you say those things, you're a paranoid right-winger. Tying in again with all this, Fox News has launched an Infowars.com clone website. You can check them out side by side. Again, cannibalizing, co-opting the alternative news, the real grassroots, redirecting, misdirecting. Shiny new internal security police cars. That's a nice photo for you. You can see the Homeland Security cars. They're just making sure everything's all right. Making sure there's no crime or terror. Because it's all the same. Court debates strip search of student. That's from the New York Times. That's been going on for a while and should make you angry and scared. Like this, cash-strapped cities try private guards over the police. That's from the Wall Street Journal. The Supreme Court somehow has actually supported the Fourth Amendment. That's from the Raw Story. Crisis as a means to building a global totalitarian state. That's a long one on globalresearch.ca. The Shanghai Cooperation Organization, headed up for the most part by Russia and China. Think of it as an anti-NATO. The SCO, the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, is something that folks like falseflagnews.com, when that was still kicking, from Daniel Abramson, as well as Webster Tarpley, talking about years ago now, the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. It's still building. It's still coalescing. This from UZReport.com. Shanghai Cooperation Organization to form single emergency situations center. Canada cops can now take all your stuff. That's from TorontoSun.com, of course, mirroring a lot of laws in the States where anything that may have somehow been connected to some kind of crime, they can just confiscate it all. Forced asset forfeiture or something like that. Nine men arrested over suspected terror plot released to UK Borders Agency. That's from The Guardian. Central Asia holds military drill. That's from the BBC. Rudd to announce civilian corps. That's, I believe, Kevin Rudd. And that's from the Sydney Morning Herald. The civilian corps. The youth corps. Obama Youth. National Service. The Plan. Rahm Emanuel. You starting to get it? Lastly, on this Police State International subheading, suspected Somali pirate arrives in the U.S. to face charges. That's from the New York Times. I'll make a quick mention right here and go into it further much later. I had the opportunity to go see Clyde Lewis at the Ground Zero Lounge a few nights ago, where his presentation was A Pirate's Lie for Ye. but a little bit on Obamasiah. His first 100 days have been pretty much even worse than we predicted, and it's not even at the 100 mark yet. I believe that'll be on the 30th. And again, Clyde Lewis noting that the 120 days could be really when the poop hits the oscillator. Obama and Chavez shake hands at a summit. Change you have been told to believe in. There is a closer examination of Obama's foreign policy. That's from freedomofinformation.wordpress.com. Obama laments not being able to ban so-called assault weapons. That's from the Examiner out of Cleveland. Key witness in Obama passport fraud case murdered. This by way of the great-looking news site Obamanati.info, where this article by DV Kid notes that, of course, the long list of murders under Clinton, of course, the Clinton body count, have we been looking at a similar thing with the new guy? Finally, Obama and Reid and the supposed Democratic leadership, they're all totally against the torture probe. You voted for these phony fucks because you thought they were going to end shit and investigate the other bastards. No! That's the game. That's how they game you. But every 4 fucking years, you go for it. ...9/11 updates. Somehow, Chucky Schumer has said he's up for a new 9/11 investigation. That's from petersnewyork.com. There's the photo. There's the interview. Former 9/11 Commission Vice Chairman makes bizarre comments about intelligence failures before the attacks. That's by way of History Commons. Port Authority of New York, New Jersey. Records for reported WTC renovation work was destroyed on 9/11. That's by way of Aiden Monahan on 911blogger.com. And finally here, interestingly enough, our old friend Rudolph Giuliani. On the telegram.com, Giuliani has connection with accused priest. Former Republican presidential candidate Rudolph Giuliani has close ties to a Catholic priest accused of sexually molesting boys and who was also the lawyer for a now-closed Wittensville counseling house for troubled priests that has been described as the center of a pedophile sex ring. Now, I didn't realize initially when I posted that up, but I see it now, that that story's from actually July 22nd, 2007. So even way before the campaign, we now see that, of course, Giuliani connected to pedophile Catholic priests. If only that were the worst of what he's involved in. And now it's the econo crash, taking the form of more and more suicides. The latest, Freddie Mac, CFO, David Kellerman, found dead from apparent suicide in Virginia.
One of Freddie Mac's highest-ranking executives was found dead this morning. Police say the company's chief financial officer took his own life. Alexis Christophers on the life and death of David Kellerman.
Police got the call before dawn, reportedly from David Kellerman's wife.
We received the call at 4:48 this morning. Officers arrived shortly thereafter and did find that Mr. Kellerman was, in fact, deceased within the home.
The body was removed from the basement of the family's Virginia home. Police say Kellerman was found hanging, an apparent suicide.
There are no signs of foul play.
There's no word yet on what might have driven Kellerman to take his life or whether he left a note. Kellerman worked his way up the ranks at Freddie Mac. He started as an analyst 16 years ago and was promoted to acting chief financial officer just last year, which put him in the eye of the storm as the government seized Freddie Mac along with its sibling Fannie Mae to save them from collapse. The company said in a statement that Kellerman was a man of great talents who will be remembered for his warmth, humor, and wit. And as news spread through Washington, Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner sent his deepest sympathies to the family. David Kellerman was just 41 years old. Alexis Christophorus, CBS News.
A nice little side note for you. Guess who was on Freddie Mac's board of directors around that same time that the shit started to go down? That's right. Rahm Emanuel, current chief of staff on the criminal cabinet of the Obama-siah. So those a couple articles, and of course there's tons more on David Kellerman, but that report was from WCCO.com, and we've also got the Associated Press. Last Friday saw Missouri and Nevada bank failures. That's 24 and 25 bank failures so far in 2009. We are keeping the score on that one. And again, Cryptogon.com calls this FDIC Friday, so we'll probably see 26, 27, hell, 28, 30 maybe. Tower of Basel, as in Switzerland, secretive plans for the issuing of a global currency. Global currency. Start Googling that phrase. Start listening to that phrase. Do we really want the Bank of International Settlements issuing our global currency? That's a great piece from Ellen Brown up on globalresearch.ca. Bank lending keeps dropping. Huh. Would that be the banks that got a lot of bailout money that were then secretly told not to loan any more out? Those banks? GM and Chrysler get extra $5.5 billion in loans. That's from the Deutsche Press Agency. And we just learned yesterday here from the AFP that General Motors is going to shut down some plants for up to 9 weeks this summer. And I've heard it speculated, and it makes a lot of sense, of the big three. They're all basically going to cave in on each other, and the one that will still live will, of course, be our dear Ford. Our Ford, who art in heaven. Again, Brave New World. Israel's own Madoff has been arrested. That's from Russia Today. U.S. initial job losses rose to 640,000 last week. That's from Bloomberg. And finally, under this econo crash note, something kind of schadenfreude, shameful joy. It's bad, but it somehow makes you feel good. Homeowners wrecking their property in a final act of foreclosure vengeance.
From the street, this foreclosed Florida home looks like a real bargain.
It sold for $325 back in 2006, and now it's on the market for $197.9. They put a new tile.
Step through the front door, and you see why.
But it looks a little rough. It's a little rough.
There are holes in the walls and the ceiling where the lights used to be. The stove is gone, along with half the kitchen faucet, both air conditioning units, and most of the bathroom.
They took a bathtub and a toilet. That's pretty unbelievable. Well, it's amazing what people do. I mean, I think people get pretty angry about what's going on.
These days, half of the foreclosed homes realtor Myra Beams handles are damaged, often by angry or desperate owners trying to squeeze every last dollar from their investment. This historic Palm Beach home was stripped bare, right down to the kitchen sink.
Well, according to the neighbors, they had a yard sale. The former owners just took the kitchen out and sold it on the front lawn.
Nationwide, experts say the loss from damaged foreclosures is in the hundreds of billions of dollars and has become a huge drag on the housing market. A recent survey of real estate agents across the country found about a third of foreclosed homes are so badly damaged that they don't qualify for standard mortgage financing and are priced at a big discount, 30% or more.
If you happen to be a neighbor of one of these damaged foreclosed homes and you have to sell your house, you can expect to sell for about 20% less.
The leases live within a few blocks of four foreclosed homes. Two are in terrible condition. They now owe more than their home is worth, in part because of falling property values.
It's sad. You know, we basically invested our life in our home, and what other people have done to get out of their particular misery or problem affects all of us.
Buyers are starting to show interest. The historic Palm Beach home without a kitchen sold for nearly $900,000 in 2006. It's now priced at $206,000.
It will cost a lot of money. It'll take a long time to bring the property back if I was going to end with this, but it would be worth it.
to avoid scenes like this, some banks are offering cash to foreclosed owners who hand over the keys while the home is still in good shape in order to stop the damage before it's done. Kelly Cobier, CBS News, Tamarack, Florida.
I've made several mentions. And again, you, as you're making your way through your town or through your city, look around at all the closed places. Businesses went down, but they still sit empty. That's definitely, it's been in my head more and more, and it's, I think, going to become one of the more amazing changes that we're going to see in the not-too-distant future. And things noted by people like Gerald Celente and at sites like deadmalls.com. Housing and large structures, they're going to be squatted in. You can guarantee it. That's going to build, I don't know what it's going to be like. All I keep thinking of are movies. Whether it's the Warriors or Escape from New York. But let's get into the drugs now, shall we? God, it's about time. It's the drug war. The failing drug war. Again, pointed out correctly by Dr. Ron Paul.
Well, I think we should look at the federal drug war, and I would say the federal drug war has failed, so we should reject it. When I talk about changing the law, I want to go back to the constitutional approach to a problem like this, and that is through the states. Up until 1937, there wasn't even a law against marijuana, and at that time, they just passed a law to tax it. So we've had an experience in this country where we didn't have all these laws, but it was regulated by the states. Alcohol is legalized by the federal government, but it's regulated, you know, by state laws. So I'm thinking more of an approach like that. But what upsets me so much is when the state tries to exert its authority over marijuana, like in California, they'll pass a law and say that sick people can use it. So people who are dying with AIDS or cancer are getting benefit from marijuana. Then the federal government comes in and says, we don't care about the state law. And they just override and they put people into prison for this. We have now over 500,000 people in prison that never committed a violent crime for drug use. And there are mandatory jail sentences under these conditions. This right. makes no sense. It's so expensive and it hasn't achieved anything.
Damn straight. That video is by way of Raw Replay. And then from the Washington Post, we have California's medical marijuana laws moving pot into the mainstream. And again, we've definitely seen that in the last several weeks. And again, I've always followed these stories, but we've only seen more of it recently. And as I've said, we ain't going to get shit as far as the war and the Patriot Act out of the Obama saga. But we might get some people out of jail for fucking smoking weed. Hell, we might even start growing it for industrial purposes, but whew, that's getting crazy. And then we have posted up on youtube.com/mediamonarchy, stolen from ABC News, cocaine highways. Post-NAFTA, most drugs cross U.S. borders in trucks.
While the U.S. is making a big show of taking the battle against the Mexican drug cartels to the border, there's a lot more to it than that. These ruthless operations are well established already across America with a distribution system that would be the envy of any major corporation.
On a rainy day in Georgia, in the Atlanta suburb of Duluth, federal drug agents are scouring this quiet neighborhood in preparation for a raid on the well-hidden operations of a Mexican drug cartel.
The majority of these raids are going to be taking place in suburban communities and subdivisions where there's a lot of hardworking people.
You couldn't build a better environment to camouflage this activity than Gwinnett County. It's a perfect place for these folks to hide in the neighborhoods.
16 suburban homes and warehouses were put under surveillance, all rented by people agents believe are connected to Mexico's Gulf cartel, thought to be heavily armed.
These criminal organizations want to make sure that they have the greatest amount of firepower possible, and that's why they're getting these weapons.
The morning of the raid, more than 100 police and federal agents suit up with bulletproof vests.
I have several magazines with rounds of ammunition, handcuffs. I will have a flashlight. So everything we need to do what we need to do.
We have 21 arrest warrants that we're executing in four counties in metro Atlanta this morning.
DEA helicopters move into place, and the agents hit the door. Among those arrested, the couple who had lived in this house for about a year. They have been charged with a conspiracy to distribute methamphetamine. Their neighbors down the block said they were stunned to learn about the alleged connections to the Mexican drug cartel.
You know why they hate meth so much? Because they don't get a fucking cut of that shit because you're brewing it up in your fucking bathtub. The feds don't get any of that, man. That really makes them angry. More humans than drugs are trafficked in Europe. But again, you won't hear anything about that. There's no war on human trafficking. There's no war on sex slavery going on because, of course, as Cynthia McKinney noted in grilling Donald Rumsfeld and Myers, Don Korn, Halliburton, kidnapping, slavery, but we keep doing business with them because that's our business. A more recent clip, but we're not going to play it right now, where we have, again, Senator Jim Webb saying that marijuana legalization should probably be considered. So this bit from Jim Webb is, I believe, just a couple of days ago. So the video's up from Raw Story, Raw Replay. I was looking to try and find where he's a senator from, but I'm not sure and I can't find it, but you can find it. So that ends the 423 News Purge with the last subheading, Drug War. With the last headline, Senator Webb says marijuana legalization should be considered. But if we jump back to April 13th on MediaMonarchy.com, again from Raw Replay, again saying U.S. should take marijuana legalization seriously.
And good morning again. The ambassador from Mexico is in New York this morning, Arturo Sarukan. Mr. Ambassador, thank you so much for joining us. The president goes to Mexico this week at a time when the Mexican government is fighting these drug cartels. Nearly 7,000 people killed in the violence down there last year. Number one, what do you want from the United States on this front? And what will your president be telling President Obama when he gets there?
First of all, Bob, that as most things in life, you need to tango. And as Mexico seeks to shut down the flow of drugs coming into the United States from Mexico, from South America, we need the support of the United States to shut down the flow of weapons and bulk cash. I think that it is very clear that President Obama has been seized by the importance of the bilateral relationship since even before his administration kicked off. The flurry of visits by Secretary Clinton, Secretary Napolitano, Attorney General Holder, down to Mexico in the previous weeks, I think have started to push the ball in the right direction. I think the key issue right now is how can the United States help to shut down those guns and shut down that bulk cash that is providing the drug syndicates in Mexico with a wherewithal to corrupt, to bribe, to kill.
Is it still safe for Americans to go to Mexico, especially to the border towns? I know in Juarez, for example, the number of killings there is just astounding. What would you advise Americans who might want to go to Mexico?
Well, I think that if you go to Juarez, I would certainly advise precaution. I think that this is one of the places where we are pushing these guys back. We're shutting them down there. And this is a place where we have seen a high concentration of drug-related violence. Almost 70% of all drug-related deaths in Mexico these past 2 years are concentrated in three places, Culiacán, Tijuana, and Ciudad Juárez. If you go to the rest of the country, you will find a country that is at peace. All tourists that have been going down these past months can certify that this is so. So yes, if you go to a place like Ciudad Juárez, I think that precaution is necessary. But violence is not prevalent in all of Mexico's territory.
Mr. Ambassador, what if marijuana were legalized? Would that change this situation?
This is a very divisive issue. There are proponents and opponents on both sides of the border. I think that those who would suggest that some of these measures be looked at understand the dynamics of the drug trade, that you have to bring demand down, and that one way that you could do it is by moving in that direction. But there are many others who believe that by doing this, you would only fan the flames. This is a debate that needs to be taken seriously, that has to be that we have to engage in on both sides of the border, both in producing, in trafficking, and in consumption countries. And it is a debate that has to be taken on with seriousness.
Mr. Ambassador, thank you for being with us this morning. A very serious subject. This will be a very important subject, obviously, in your country. Thank you so much for bringing us your point of view on it this morning.
No problem, Bob. That was Mexican Ambassador Arturo Saruca noting, of course, that the U.S. should take marijuana legalization seriously. Couple flashbacks in there. Of course, Ron Paul debating a war on drugs supporter, and of course, recently, industrial hemp and letting drugs in. The industrial hemp, of course, being again introduced into Congress by Barney Frank and Ron Paul, industrial hemp farming. And the letting drugs in part, of course, where people like Lou Dobbs, among others, have noted, well, geez, the only way this could be all be going is if it's supposed to be. An update from themoderatevoice.com, Washington's strategy of chaos and intervention in Mexico. And that's what this all is. It's all order out of chaos. But that's going to do it for this B-side episode of 119 of MediaMonarchy.com. Of course, stay tuned for episode 120 coming right up. Again, I implore you to do the research yourself. Send me the headlines of some of the things that you dig up. MediaMonarchy@yahoo.com. There's an infinite number of ways you can send me stuff. FaceSpace, YouTube, Yahoo, IM, Skype, Twitter, all that stuff. There's so much. I'm going to try in 120 to get my thoughts out and distill it a little more. Because all I can basically say is right now is we're under attack. In your gut, you know things ain't going right. So we're going to wrap up this episode with something I did want to get to last week. Because I mentioned, I believe a couple weeks ago, when we were talking about backward speech, Obama and the Antichrist. And I mentioned that, of course, back in church, back in the day, back in the early 80s at Emmanuel Baptist Church in southern West Virginia, my favorite thing was when they brought in the people to talk about the evils of rock music and movies and TV and celebrities and all that stuff. Because, of course, I couldn't go to the movies or buy music or any of that, so, of course, any time I could get it, even if it was a guy telling me that Billy Idol was a devil worshiper or something, I loved it. So I mentioned that on the show, and my man Spencer at ChicagoCopWatch.org sent me an awesome remix from someone known as DJ Lobster Dust. Because I mentioned back in the day, and I don't know if this is the same guy that we're going to hear sampled in this piece, that came to my church. I have no idea what that guy's name was. Maybe I can find out. But Spencer said, hey, maybe it was that guy. So, DJ Lobster Dust has the Queen versus Satan Lobster Dust Satanic Reverses remix. Of course, featuring the infamous Pastor Gary Greenwald. That's the name of the guy who went around playing rock music backwards for people. So, again, with thanks to Spencer at ChicagoCopWatch.org and you for listening and helping and sharing in MediaMonarchy.com. That's going to do it for this B-side episode. Because, of course, it's fun to smoke marijuana. Take care.
Damien, the omen, because you're the devils, you're the demons, and you know that. Your music, rock and roll, is a satanic music. When they say you turn around, you make the music go back, and you hear Satan speaking. You make the music go back, you hear Satan speaking. You make the music go back, you hear Satan speaking. You make the music go back, you hear Satan speaking. You make the music go back, you hear Satan speaking. You make the music go back, you hear Satan speaking. You make the music go back, you hear Satan speaking. You make the music go back, you make the music go back, you make the music go back, you hear Satan speaking.
Today's message is a solemn warning to all young people who listen to rock and roll and heavy metal music. Satan knows he only has a short time to deceive the earth, so he's using music as his antichrist tool to deceive the masses.
You make the music go back, you hear Satan speaking.
And I'm finally beginning to unravel a bizarre and fiendish plot designed by Satan's antichrist system to corrupt, pervert, and ultimately enslave the youth of this generation.
Another one bites the dust. You make the music go back, you hear Satan speaking.
Satan's satanic takeover of our youth through rock music.
You make the music go back, you hear Satan speaking.
All rock music is dangerous. I want to tell you that today, even some of the mellow stuff that doesn't sound like it has anything in it that could be deceptive or even misleading. I started asking God, can you show me how he's doing it? I wanted to have proof positive. Now, Queen has a song called
Another One Bites the Dust.
We have the same reaction the first service. The kids went, oh no, not Queen. Not Another One Bites the Dust.
Another One Bites the Dust.
All rock music is dangerous.
Another One Bites the Dust.
I want you to know today that Satan has planted his lyrics in the music, and some of it is subliminal. That means it's down at low decibel levels where you wouldn't hear it audibly as you play the music at the speed that you, or the high sound levels that you would regularly play it.
You make the music go back, you hear Satan speaking.
Satan has planted his lyrics in the music.
You make the music go back, you hear Satan speaking.
There's another message going on below the surface. This is called subliminal programming.
You make the music go back, you hear Satan speaking.
But I want to say something. I don't believe that this particular masking was intentional. I think that this is something that Satan himself put into the music. Let's play it forwards. Another One Bites the Dust.
Another one bites the dust. Another one bites the dust. Ow! Another one bites the dust. Hey, hey! Another one bites the dust. Hey!
Okay, I'm gonna play that for you backwards. It's the next cassette. We'll have to put a new cassette in. And on this next cassette, I want you to hear the secret message. It's over and over and over. It says, it's fun to smoke marijuana. It's fun to smoke marijuana. It's fun to smoke marijuana. You listen to it and tell me if it's not there. Let's play that. You see what the secret message was? It's fun to smoke marijuana. It's fun to smoke marijuana. It's fun to smoke marijuana. Now I'm going to play that backwards for you once more for those of you that are skeptics. This is called subliminal programming. Amen. Amen.
How would you explain it?
Combining music and stylized images.
It's all remote control.
Each one of those images was electronically based.
Say out on my threat.
And that concludes our program for tonight.
This could really catch on.
I can't remember when I've been so moved.